Hi, this is the Dark Tangent. The speech you're about to listen to was originally recorded at DEF CON 5 at the Aladdin Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, 1997. Now all rights are reserved except permission for educational non-profit use. If you have any questions about DEF CON or the copyright status, contact me at dtangent@defcon.org or the website at www.defcon.org. Now kick back and relax.
Turbo dice? Regulation 5. I was thinking I'd really get in trouble.
Okay.
Righto, now that that's done, is there any tension? On to Samir. Now, I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name. I do it a couple times on voice modeling. He was nice enough not to yell at me or kind of mention my faux pas. So I just prefer to let it slide and say, Sam, Samir, how's it going? We know from C2.net, they distribute SoftCrypto products for web servers. They have a modified Apache called Stronghold. It's got a new version of 2.0156 or something. And if you haven't noticed it, it's one of the best, or at least the word is on the street, it's one of the best hard web servers out there. So if you're going to try to put something up, I would suggest trying to get it if you're not going to go over your Netscape route. He has all the programmers outside of the country to avoid strange cryptographic export control laws. That's pretty interesting to see how you jump through the loop to do that. You notice some microsystems are starting to do similar stuff. If you want to talk sort of on the other side of Rubenstein's speech, we're wondering sort of a theoretical. He wants to talk about implementation and a little bit of the real world scenario. So here's part two of why cryptography is part of the loop.
So we were yesterday first on how to implement good crypto systems, a lot of the problems you have implementing good crypto systems, and a lot of the issues where crypto systems don't work, where they will work, and such. Now, suppose, for example, you have a crypto system, you followed all of those guidelines, you've developed a system which works, it's been audited, it's been gone through, you're pretty sure it's secure, but then you try to deploy it and no one's using it. People start threatening you with lawsuits, people start threatening you with jail. What's happening? How do you actually get the crypto system that actually works into people's hands so they actually use it and so that we actually make the net secure? Because the net can't be secure if we have good crypto systems. The net can only be secure if people actually use our good crypto systems. So I'm going to talk about how we can actually make our good crypto systems that we develop in use worldwide so that the net is actually secure and we're protected from all the nasty people that Louis Free thinks will use crypto systems to destroy us. So, a few of the barriers to deployment in crypto, I just have outlined here, so I'll be going into more detail. We've got, first, we have patents. There's a lot of patents on cryptography. Export controls. Our lovely U.S. government thinks that they want to be able to tap what everyone has to say. PKI is public key infrastructure involved. There's a lot of work that you have to do in order to get your public keys across in a authenticated manner. And, of course, the U.S. government is viewing lies, double speak, and a lot better public relations than they were doing during the Clipper debacle. So first, speak of patents. The patents on public key cryptography, the main ones that we have to contend with. First, we have the RSA patent, which doesn't expire for some time now. It expires in September year 2000. And while it's only valid inside the United States is currently a pretty large segment of the internet. So in order to do any sort of RSA cryptography, you've got to license the RSA patent from RSA Data Security, or are they going to threaten to sue you? So this is not cheap. It requires dealing with RSA, that lovely company, NerdWithTrust. And you basically need to license the stuff, or they will threaten to sue you and make your life miserable. Even if you have licensed the stuff, they still sue you. Take PGP, for example. And other patents involved in cryptography are the Stanford patents, which are the patents which expire relatively soon now, which is a good thing. These patents One of the patents covers all of public key cryptography, which a number of people have been contesting for vagueness, overbreadth. I don't know the specifics of patent law here. But they do cover, they do expire, and they also, the other patent is the one that covers specifically Diffie-Hellman, the public key exchange mechanism, which is not in very widespread use at the moment. Probably because of extremely good marketing by RSA Data Security. Currently, if you need to, wanted to use it today, you'd have to license that directly from Xilinx, but they do expire in fall 97. So if your application isn't going to get deployed until fall of 97, you might as well use this because you won't have to license those patents. Expo control. So the U.S. government has, of course, implemented all sorts of export controls. I think we're familiar with the export controls which have been imposed. They stop worldwide deployment of anything developed inside the United States. Now, most computer companies are inside the United States. They do all the development inside the United States. Most U.S. computer companies hire people inside the United States. And in addition to the fact that development inside the United States is illegal, the U.S. likes to impose its laws on its citizens worldwide. So if you're a U.S. citizen, you are in Amsterdam, for example, and you wanted to write some crypto code, you could not write that crypto code and hand it to your neighbor. That would be a violation of the U.S. export control. The U.S. is the only, I believe the former Soviet Union also had these rules where a U.S. citizen is bound by U.S. law worldwide. No other countries have such laws, and it makes us all real happy. The export controls carry criminal penalties and just civil penalties with patents. With patents, you have civil penalties. If you were violating a patent, you could get sued. You'd have to pay some sort of damages. But with the export controls, they threaten you with jail. So if you export some code, they try to send you to jail. They might want to plea bargain, make that down, and you admit to it. So that certainly does put a damper on developing crypto, because if you're in the crypto business, you've got to look at the federal sentencing guidelines before you establish your business plan. Another barrier is the public key infrastructure. In order for a secure system to be deployed, like Bruce was saying, you have to get your trust models in place and adequately define your trust model. Well, currently, there's two trust models in place. There's the S509 Verisign SSL S/MIME trust model system, which is very hierarchical. And then you've got the PGP Web of Trust. In order to deploy an application which people are going to use, in a lot of cases you have to deploy an application that already has a deployed base, unless you can actually force people to start using it, or unless you can try to force people to start using it. The deployed base has a public key infrastructure, like I was saying. SSL does X.509, which is a based on the X500 directory structure. It's very hierarchical. You've got a certification authority, which is at the top, and it certifies people saying, binding their name to their public key. And in such a system, everyone has to trust the root. And there you have the fact that everyone has to trust the root, and how do you know that everyone is going to trust the root? So it doesn't particularly work very well when you've got a huge set of people who don't necessarily trust the root to authenticate everyone. But it does work in a corporate setting where you trust, theoretically, your corporate security manager or your badging office who gives everyone a little corporate badges so they can get into the office building. PGP does a web of trust system, and that takes a bit more work in order to get integrated into the PKI, because anyone generating a key can't just send it to the certification authority and get it approved. But it does provide better trust on a person-to-person level, like Bruce was saying, because you trust your friends more than you trust a faraway corporate entity. And S/MIME, the email standard, which RSA and Netscape and Microsoft are all supporting, does X.509, which requires a hierarchical system. And how are these things going to operate? For a system to be widely deployed, it's going to have to interoperate. You can't just say, oh, the PGP wasn't trusted, doesn't work as well as I'd like it to. That 509 system is hierarchical, and I think that's evil, so I'm going to develop a system which is completely different. And even if your system solves all the problems and is secure, if it doesn't interoperate with whatever people are using, then they're not going to use it. And another problem in deploying secure systems is the double-speak and outright lies that the government is saying about, for example, the key management infrastructure they like talking about. The key management infrastructure is their way of saying PCI with Tiesto. They have been trying to tell people that in order for a robust PKI to exist, where people trust each other's public keys, the government needs to have access to all the private keys. And by calling it a key management infrastructure, the government can say, oh, we need this key management infrastructure, and no one can say, and you can't really say, no, we don't need a key management infrastructure, because the PKI is clearly needed. It's just that the government version of the key management infrastructure actually destroys all trust that we could have in a key management infrastructure, because they would have access to all the keys. But through this PR, through the fact that they're saying that commercial needs need, that corporations need Tiesto, they've actually managed to convince companies who don't really need Tiesto in certain situations that they do need Tiesto. And this prevents a barrier to deploying secure systems, because you've got even your customers telling you that they want something which will compromise their security. While key backup, like Bruce was saying, has its merits, Tiesto for communication security has absolutely no place. So there's absolutely no reason for a company to request Tiesto in a system that's doing communication security like an SSL application. But companies are actually requesting Tiesto from their vendors, even though they don't need it. Netscape, for example, after Netscape got approval, to export 56-bit DES in their browsers. And when I took the developers to task, saying, why did you agree to do Tiesto? Their excuse was, companies are demanding this. So we're just going to implement it in all our products because some of our customers are demanding it. And those customers, the reason they're demanding it isn't because they need it, it's because the government has convinced them that they need it. They don't really need it, and by implementing it, it makes it very easy for the government to just say, well, now it's implemented in every version of Netscape, let's just require that it be turned on, and if you don't check the Tiesto box in your Netscape mail or your Netscape browser, then we'll send you to jail for 10 years. However, luckily enough, a lot of these problems have solutions and we can deploy strong crypto, although it is a little bit more difficult than we'd like it to be. One, of course, is offshore development. Another is being flexible about choosing your protocols. You don't want to be stuck to any religious preferences because your religion might end up hurting the deployment of your application. You can use DSS and Zippy Helmet instead of RSA key management because that will provide safety from patents and safety from some of the bills in Congress. And you need a strong, uncompromising attitude about security. If your customer wants something that isn't secure, you have to say no. You can't put your name on something which is going to be insecure. There's a lot of problems with doing that. It hurts worldwide security in the end. For offshore development, it costs more to do your development overseas. Some people say it costs less, but that's only if you do your development in one of those less expensive countries and you're a really large company. But for a small company, like C2, for example, it does end up costing more, but you end up with a lot larger market. The world has 5 billion people in it. The U.S. has 250 million. Most of the internet is in the U.S. right now, but it's growing a lot faster outside the United States right now because it started a lot smaller. So it's a huge market out there, and the added expense of doing the offshore development provides us multiple benefits. You get a larger market, you can make more money. You get wider deployment of strong crypto. You don't have to give in to government restrictions on crippled keys. You don't have a situation where domestic users of your product who are entitled to using strong crypto end up with weak crypto. Netscape, for example, most of the browsers out there, even though they're all U.S. Browsers, still support broken weak triple strictly crypto. So even though Netscape themselves strong crypto inside the United States, they're not, because they have a product which does weak crypto. We do all our development outside the United States. There's no reason to sell a product that does only weak crypto, because we can sell it worldwide with all the core crypto. We just import it. What helps us as a small company is that we've located our intellectual property in a tax haven, which is Angola. Now, that doesn't really provide us any tax benefits per se from U.S. taxes, because U.S. tax law is worldwide, basically. If you're a U.S. citizen, you get taxed worldwide. But it does provide us with the benefit of not having to pay taxes in other jurisdictions. So, if we had a development of our offshore subsidiary storing its IP in a taxable jurisdiction, we'd have to pay taxes there and taxes in the United States. We save money by putting subsidiaries in tax havens. And we just locate our developers where we live. Our developers don't have to move to the Caribbean, even though they might want to. And that saves some money. It depends on, we don't have to move people around. And of course, because we can't ship U.S. citizens outside of the U.S. to do development because of the U.S. laws against U.S. citizens deploying U.S. citizens being bound by U.S. law no matter where they go. Of course, you could, one could abandon their U.S. citizenship, but most people find that very difficult to do when you have to make sure you have citizenship in another country, because most people don't want to be without a passport ever. And during development offshore, you need to be very careful with David Ahrens, the U.S. Special Envoy for Cryptography, I believe. His job, specifically, is to bully other countries into instituting export restrictions like the United States. Their plan is to make it so that companies like ours can do development outside the United States, because if we did our development outside the United States, our products could only be sold in the countries in which they were developed. And while the U.S. government and David Ahrens himself say, my goal is to promote the liberalization of crypto export controls, the fact of the matter is the U.S. has the worst crypto export controls in the world. And, well, maybe not. No, France, you can export crypto, you just can't use crypto inside France. France doesn't have as bad export controls as the U.S., but they have worse domestic restrictions on crypto than the U.S. So David Ahrens claims he's trying to liberalize crypto export control. He claims that other countries are saying that U.S. crypto export controls are hurting them, but those are all misleading. I remember at the RSA Data Security Conference, he said how when he was at the OECD meeting, a number of other countries were upset with the United States for what they were doing with respect to liberalizing crypto export controls. And how the U.S. crypto export controls hurt national security within their country. His spin on it was that U.S. liberalization of crypto export controls was hurting their national security. However, it seems pretty clear that a lot of international countries, the national security is hurt by the non-existence of strong crypto outside the United States. Now that we have a number of companies developing strong crypto outside the United States, CQNet, Sun, a number of internationally-based companies, it's not as much of a problem that the U.S. has strong crypto export controls. It doesn't hurt the national security of foreign governments as much as it does today, as it did a little while ago, at least. But still, protocol choice is also very important, like I was saying about interoperability. You don't want to have something that's perfect if no one can use it. It's wise, I believe, to support both the X509 and PGP formats. There's currently a huge public relations battle going on between PGP and Netscape and Microsoft and RSA, saying which is discussing which is going to be the email protocol of choice. Is it going to be PGP MIME or is it going to be S-MIME? At the moment, it's very difficult to say how that's going to turn out. PGP claims we're going to take over the world, and RSA, Netscape, and Microsoft say they're going to take over the world. PGP is focused on the wider deployed base, wider use than S-MIME. S-MIME has a wider deployed base because it's now in every version of Netscape 4. But not that many people are using Netscape 4, but it does have much more corporate backing than PGP does. So at the moment, in order for a email application to work, it has to support basically everything. You have to support the people using PHP, and you have to support the people using S/MIME. It makes it more difficult, but then you get wider deployment. Another option is to use this DSS and Diffie Hellman as opposed to RSA key management for communicating your session keys for your sessions. The patent for Diffie Hellman expired this fall, so you can use it without any patent restrictions. You don't have to license patents and filing your RSA. The DSS Diffie Hellman provides a very large benefit over RSA, and that it provides a flip for secrecy when communicating. With RSA, if someone compromises your private key, they get access to every communication that has happened with that private key. With Diffie Hellman DSS, if they compromise your private key, they can start forging signatures in your name, but they cannot compromise the privacy of all the previous transactions, because the Diffie Hellman protocol provides proof of secrecy. Unless you escrowed every single session, then and that escrow got stolen, then all your privacy does not get compromised if your private keys get compromised. And Diffie Hellman DSS provides some protection to McCain-Curry because of the proof of secrecy. If they require that you escrow every Diffie Hellman session key, then one issue there is that in order to escrow every Diffie Hellman session key, the government or the certified key escrow agents are going to have to have an internet connected machine that's going to have to support thousands of connections per second for every key that gets escrowed. And that's, of course, a huge security hole. And so if they don't do that, they're only going to have to escrow the signing key, which puts the potential of using digital signatures in commerce and in any legal field, because if your keys are escrowed, then they're not going to stand up in court. And it doesn't hurt your privacy, because using Diffie Hellman, which provides some support secrecy, and the private key is generated for every session. DSS Diffie Hellman is now supported in both SSL and PGP, and there's a lot of discussion in the IETF about supporting how to support DSS Diffie Hellman DSS in email. Diffie Hellman per se is not used in email. PGP is using ElseMal, but they call it Diffie Hellman for marketing. ElseMal has similarities to Diffie Hellman, so they just call it Diffie Hellman for marketing reasons. It makes it a lot easier to deal with. And then finally, you have to make sure you have an uncompromising attitude. If your customer requests the escrow, you can't give it to them because it's going to hurt their security. You have to refuse to sell these people weak and secure systems. If someone has a weak and secure system, and they say, well, we need it because the government says we need it, that's clearly wrong. It should be explained to them that's clearly what the government is saying. And if they ask you for it, if they offer to pay you for it, you should have an uncompromising attitude. It will not help you or your future to sell someone an insecure system and have it broken 6 months later. We had this large customer doing a contract for a large foreign government, and they wanted to do key escrow. Their original assumption, after having talked to us, was that they were going to have to get export-grade crypto from the United States, and then they talked to us and realized that wasn't a problem. But then they started wanting to do key escrow. So we disabused them of that notion relatively quickly. It was rather difficult. We basically had to tell them we were willing to do the contract, but we told them that if we did the contract with them, they would not be allowed to use our name in any way at all, or we would sue their asses off. And then they decided to not use Fiasco in the protocol, because I guess they realized after that how insecure it was. So I guess that's everything, all my slides, and everything I had to say specifically. So I will open up to questions. Declan.
What about import control?
Well, remote control is definitely different. It's not different from the United States. We might end up having to set up development outside the United States as well as development outside the United States. That could get complicated. Or we might just not sell inside the United States and concentrate on the foreign market. It is difficult to say what we will. We don't have a public plan for what will happen if that passes. More questions? Yeah. It seems like an extremely good thing what Sun is doing. I haven't specifically looked at the arrangement with Alvin, but it clearly shows that other companies are following in our footsteps for doing development offshore. We like to say we export jobs, not crypto. And Sun is doing the same thing. They're exporting jobs rather than crypto. Sun is slightly doing things differently than we are by keeping the by not keeping the location of the development secret. We keep the location secret because we don't want David Aaron to concentrate on that country. Sun doesn't feel that's necessary. So we'll see how that pans out. Whether David Aaron is going to concentrate on Russia or not remains to be seen. When RSA did entered into a relationship with NTT in Japan for NTT to ship strong crypto RSA accelerator chips worldwide, the U.S. government, before they hired Dave Manero, quickly pressured the Japanese government into instituting export controls of their own, and since then, no RSA accelerator chips were exported from Japan. We need to make sure that doesn't happen with our developing country, and I hope that doesn't happen with Russia or Pakistan. Yes? Right, that's the argument for key backup within storage system. If you've got a corporate database which is encrypted, you don't want the person holding the keys clearly to run away with that data. But you don't need a escrow system per se to give it to a third party key escrow agent. You can just back up your key, and if you don't want to back up your key to a single location, you back up your key using a secret sharing algorithm and back it up into 20 different locations around your offices. And that doesn't really specifically require a key escrow, that's more of a key backup situation. What the government is trying to promote is key escrow communication system. If you have an SSL session, one of the parties dies or runs away, what use is there in recovering the contents of the SSL session? If the database application on one end of the SSL session is well written, then there'll be sufficient logging to a storage encrypted mechanism, which would be protected by key backup. And you don't need to escrow any of the real-time communications. For email, you don't necessarily need to escrow that. You could have a corporate policy of encrypting to a corporate key, or you could store your key with your manager if you go on vacation and you want your manager or your office manager or secretary to be able to read your mail while you're away. But in situations like that, that doesn't require any sort of government-related key escrow system. That's just a key backup sort of system. Yeah?
You're talking about key escrow as depositing the key with a third party, not a corporate situation where the corporate key is also encrypting the data in addition to the person's key. So when they die, lose it, get hit by the truck or whatever, the corporation can still recover the data.
Yeah, what's important is a lot of what I was saying about the, basically that's correct. What is important is making sure that the government tries to take all these key escrow, for example, makes perfect sense from before the government decided to take that term and mutate it for their own purposes. Now when you talk about key escrow, the government says, key escrow is perfectly okay, we're keeping it within our company. And that is the traditional understanding of what key escrow would have meant. But however, the government decided to turn that term into something which violates corporate security. And that's why it's rather difficult to discuss this issue now because of all the doublespeak and lies that the government's been promulgating. So when saying key escrow, I think it's important to not confuse people. And when the government says key escrow, make sure that people realize that government disguised key escrow is meant to further their goal, which is the ability to wiretap everyone. More questions? Oh, yes.
If the protocols were standardized worldwide, even if they restrict import all of a sudden or whatever, as long as a product is developed in multiple countries or multiple products are used, can they then interoperate?
Right. If every country decided to implement import controls and export controls, then it certainly would be possible because the standards are public information and the U.S. government has a First Amendment and you can't ban standards documents. Then it would be possible for a fully secure system to be implemented. However, that would be extremely expensive, extremely difficult, so we need to make sure that import and export controls do not get passed in the various jurisdictions around the world. And that also implies that there are no domestic restrictions on the use of cryptography within countries. France, for example, they have pretty nasty restrictions on the use of cryptography. The McCain-Kerry bill is promoting mandating key escrow for every cryptography application for federal funds. They're mandating that if a certification authority wants any protection from liability, they're going to have to require that their customers escrow their keys with a government-approved key escrow agent. And domestic restrictions on cryptography, if promulgated worldwide, will kill the widespread deployment of strong cryptography, strong security, and systems will be held open to any random terrorist. Okay, thank you.